General Menezes, Real 6. Now, we've got you to Taal and you joined your new battalion. So what actually happened when you joined? This is the 3rd Battalion Indian Grenadiers, 3rd Regiment.
The 3rd Battalion.
3rd Battalion.
The 3rd Battalion of the Indian Grenadiers. So the first development was that the British officers were leaving. So by now the writing was definitely on the wall.
What impact did that have, the departure? I mean, would the colonel went as well, Colonel Shibley?
No, he was not going. He was not going, but the second in command went in April. A Major Dennis Newman, because he had applied for reversion to the British Army. He was ex-RAF. So he applied for reversion to the British Army because the reason that he applied was that his health in India had run down. He developed tuberculosis and had one lung removed. So consequently, he decided to leave India and he applied for the British Army.
Now, did the other British officers go as well, or was that the only one?
No, they were. Now, you see, you only had with Dennis Newman leaving, who was a regular officer. He was replaced by, which was very odd, by a West Punjabi officer. As I say, up to now, the partition decision had not been taken, nor had the independence decision been taken. But independence writing was on the wall in terms of the Nationalization Committee having been appointed. So insofar as the British officers were concerned at the time I joined, there was only Colonel Shabia, but there was no decision as yet for him to be retired prematurely. And Newman was going as a result of his own choice. He wanted to revert to the British Army. He'd come to the Indian Army from the RAF on account of his health, because as I say, he had a part of his lung removed.
So what happened next?
We only at that point of time had a Major Grief left. Major Grief was a British Emergency Commission officer. As a result of the anticipatory decision about Indian independence, the British could not get regular commissions. British Emergency Commission officers could not get regular commissions in the British, in the Indian Army. So some of them applied. They could only apply for regular commissions in the British Army, the British officers, British Emergency Commission officers of the Indian Army. So Grief had applied for a regular commission in the British Army, but had been rejected. So he was being demobilized or released, whichever term you wish to adopt. So first Newman left, then a couple of months later, Grief left. So only Colonel Shabia was the last British officer. But the point I'm trying to make, in place of Dennis Newman as second in command, we got a West Punjabi officer. By rights, he should not have come to a battalion that would have gone to India in any case. But the argument in then GHQ, Auchinleck was resisting partition of the Indian Army. In fact, he was averse to partition totally. Auchinleck was correct. So we got a West Punjabi officer, a Muslim, who became the second in command. And Shabir had to be even-handed with him because Shabir could not anticipate partition. He could not anticipate that the Indian Army would be divided. So I was a company commander, but there were very few Indian company commanders per se. That was one of the reasons why I had been brought in, because some of the British company commanders had been offered to Colonel Shabir, the ones who had been in the battalion. One died the other day. His obituary came in the papers, Major Dunlop. But Shabir refused to have him back because he said, what is the purpose of getting a British officer back into the battalion when the others are being posted out? So we were deployed in the referendum. Once the partition decision had been taken, a referendum had to be held whether the Northwest Frontier Province went to India or the future Pakistan. So we were deployed as a battalion looking after about 20 villages for this referendum. We didn't actually do the referendum, we were only guarding the booths. But here things went wrong badly because, you see, the Mountbatten had arrived on he had arrived, and his charter had not had been to try to maintain a unitary form of government. That was the charter given to him by the Attlee government. But also that independence, if declared, would be by June 48. But Mountbatten was in quite a hurry. I'm not saying that he was precipitate, but he was definitely in a hurry. So the question arose as to what to do with these various provinces, as they were then known, now known as states, what to do with these various provinces, which had, in some cases, largely Muslim population, but what could be deemed a Hindu Congress government. So Northwest Frontier Province was in the hands of a Congress government with a Muslim chief minister. But it was what you would call a secular government because it was a Congress government. Now, the chief minister was a gentleman called Khan Saab. His brother was Abdul Ghaffar Khan. Now, Abdul Ghaffar Khan, every book that you read from with the British author reviles him, but he was a great man. He was known as the Frontier Gandhi. Apart from his known as the Frontier Gandhi, he was non-violent in his approach. He wanted all solutions to be by non-violence. He was very simple in his habits. He wore what Gandhi wore, called khadar, that is the handspun cloth. And he was devoted to his people. Now, all he asked Mountbatten for was that if you're going to divide this country, which he did not agree with, the choice should not be Hindustan, that is India and Pakistan. The choice should be tripartite, that is India, Pakistan, and what he called Pakhtunistan, independence for the Pathans, independence for the Northwest Frontier Province. Pakhtunistan, P-A-K-H-U-N-I-S-T-A-N, Pakhtunistan. So Mountbatten did not agree. He said the choice could not be, it could only be India and Pakistan. But India went in Bengal, that is what eventually happened. You got Bangladesh on the ground today. Though at that point of time it was only India, Pakistan, but eventually Bangladesh did not accept that religion can be a basis for nationality. And so you have Bangladesh. So from the point of view of Ghaffar Khan, he was far-seeing. He did anticipate the same kind of Bangladesh situation, and all he wanted was Pakhtunistan. But Mountbatten did not agree. He said the choice could only be India or Pakistan. So possibly unwisely, Abdul Ghaffar Khan then gave the call for a boycott of this referendum. We were unwitting in the sense that we were only providing the protection for the referendum.
Now, this referendum was for the whole of the Northwest Frontier Province, wasn't it?
Yes. The whole of the Northwest Frontier Province. And so the Hindus and the Sikhs, as well as the Muslims, the nationalist Muslims, boycotted it. That was Abdul Ghaffar Khan's appeal, which I think was a wrong decision, unwise decision, because he fervently thought that Mountbatten would at the last moment to reverse himself.
Now, did anything happen when you were guarding the ballot, the ballot
No, there was no distinction. the ones who were not voting didn't try to steal the ballot boxes in any way, but a law and order, shall we say, situation had been envisaged. And Sir Ulf Caro, who had been the governor, was replaced by Sir George Cunningham, and then later Sir George Cunningham was replaced by General Lockhart. So at the time that the referendum was held, General Rob Lockhart was the referendum commissioner, as also the governor. Mountbatten thought that a military governor would be needed if a law and order situation developed during the referendum. But in the event, Abdul Ghaffar Khan's followers were very disciplined, much more than the Muslim League. And there was no major law and order. There was no major law and order problem. The odd village may have given trouble, but otherwise there was no law and order problem right through the Northwest Frontier Province. So in the event, 50.8% of the electorate voted, because the rest boycotted it. But Mountbatten, from the point of view of his semantics, argued that 50.8% had voted for Pakistan, because he ignored the point that the Hindus and the nationalist Muslims had boycotted it. And he then said the Northern Frontier Province would go to Pakistan. Thereafter, Pakistan Independence Day was on 14th of August. And
how did you feel about this?
Well, I was impersonal about it, in the sense that as a service officer I could not take sides. But I did feel that partition was the wrong decision. Mountbatten had been clearly told in the charter given to him by the British cabinet to strive for a unitary form of government. But instead, you see, the same problem had really occurred even at what was called the Shimla Conference in 1946, when Wavell was the viceroy. Wavell should have imposed, shall we say, self-government at that stage, rather than try to get these bickering political parties together. I mean, at that particular similar conference in 1946, Jinnah, as the leader of the Muslim League, who was asking for partition, would not shake hands with the leader of the Indian Congress, who was a Muslim, Maulana Azad. So though you had nationalist Muslims in the Indian National Congress, Jinnah argued that the Muslim League was the only voice of the Indian Muslim. So that kind of tone had been set by Jinnah at the Shimla Conference in September 46. And that continued with Jinnah, though on his deathbed in September 48, he now wanted to make up an undo partition. But by that time, in his dying breath when he said this, the person, Liaquat Ali Khan, who was the chief minister, suppressed it. The story later came out in November 87, when the doctor, Colonel Ilahi, who was administering to Jinnah, he published his account before he himself died in the Frontier Post of November 87. But that is all past history. And much water has flown.
So the partition came about, and you gave the date. Was it August 47?
Pakistan's Independence Day was 14th August 47, because Mountbatten said he could not be in two places at the same time. So Indian Independence Day he fixed as 15th August, and Pakistan he fixed as 14th August, so that he could attend the Pakistani one. And then, so on the night of 14th August, there was some shooting in Thar village, and the ones who were supporters of the Frontier Gandhi, that is were chased. Some of them took shelter in the local mosque, where they were killed by the Muslim leaguers. But nevertheless, the disturbances were not on a major scale in the frontier province at that particular point of time, November 15th, August 47. But the point that I come to now is that General Massavi, who was the commander-in-chief now of the Pakistan Army, British commander-in-chief now of the Pakistan Army, because Lockhart had gone from Peshawar to Delhi to become the commander-in-chief of the divided Indian Army. So Massavi, we were supposed to, being an Indian battalion, we were allotted to India. I was the Muslim company commander in the 3rd Battalion of the Indian Grenadiers. They were all Indian Muslims, and all had opted for India. Their homes were in India. But the so-called the Reconstitution Committee for the Indian Army was officered by a British service officer, Major General Irwin. Now, he never imagined that that all the Indian Muslims would vote for India. So in the event the so-called Reconstitution Committee assumed, under persuasion by the Pakistani representative on it, who happened to be Brigadier Raza, my erstwhile boss, that all the Muslims would opt for Pakistan, and had allotted the units or subunits accordingly to Pakistan, without waiting for the individual's option. And we come to that later, but as I say, the whether Hindus or Sikhs in Pakistan or Indian Muslims, they had the choice of opting for the new dominions. The Indian Muslims of my company all opted India, and I had not influenced them in any way. But they themselves opted because their homes were in India. So Massavi flew in about 28, 29th of August, and he met the commanding officer at the airfield. We were supposed to be the second unit that entrained, because a Sikh battalion was the first unit to entrain on 1st September to go to India. The 3rd battalion was allotted to Pakistan. So Massavi said that the Sikh battalion was going to be attacked when he flew in. That was the 28th to 29th August. What he did not divulge, that he, as Commander-in-Chief Pakistan, had already signed an operation instruction called Operation Gulmarg on 22nd August for the tribesmen to invade Kashmir. You see, the gentleman, a serving officer of the then undivided Indian Army, was a lieutenant colonel in Delhi in the Military Operations Directorate. He admits to starting the planning for the invasion of Kashmir by the tribesmen, so-called spontaneous invasion, actually pre-planned. He, in his book called Raiders in Kashmir, the then Major General Akbar Khan, but actually at that time, after independence, made a brigadier in Pakistan, a lieutenant colonel before independence in the undivided GHQ in India. He says he was approached to prepare a plan, which he did, for the invasion of Kashmir. He admits that. Later, of course, separately, that was denied. But to come back to the point, since we were going to be at the receiving end at this place, Thal, Massavi had some inkling that as a result of his so-called operation instruction, these tribesmen, instead of waiting to go into Kashmir, the date had been fixed already as 22nd October. that they would only threaten the Sikhs. And the tribesmen would be celebrating a day called Saragari Day in 1897. So they would be observing the 50th anniversary of Saragari, when a platoon of Sikhs had been overrun nearby at a place called Fort Lockhart. The actual picket is called Saragari. So anyway, General Masavi in his wisdom arrived. And this is, as I say, I have shaken the BBC when I mentioned this to them in this interview of mine with them. General Masavi arrived and said that he had information that the Third Sikhs would be attacked by these tribesmen who had concentrated on the Samana Ridge at Fort Lockhart, but that it was only a so-called celebration of this so-called anniversary, when 30,000 tribesmen had killed 22 Sikhs, and that we would then take their place on this train which was scheduled for the Sikhs, and the Sikhs would be smuggled out at night by a devious route from Thal to Mirali, Bannu, and out at night. So the tribesmen would not know that the Sikhs had been smuggled out. But when the tribesmen saw that the unit that was actually traveling was non-Sikh, they would not attack. That seemed to be the line of reasoning that he had given to my commanding officer, Colonel Shabir. I mean, I was not present, because I was only a company commander. And I think Masavi had an inkling that an attack was going to take place on this train of Third Sikhs. In the event they attacked us, they started by telling Colonel Shabir to hand over the Sikhs. We had only two, one an officer and one an education Viceroy's Commission officer, and they were asked to be handed over. He said, "We have no Sikhs." He told them to keep their heads down, but these two people showed their heads when the firing started, and these people then began firing more intensely. So in these 2 days of skirmishes, we lost 26 killed and 72 wounded.
Now, what do you remember of those skirmishes?
Well, I think it's very sad, because these people had been armed by the Pakistan Army. They were trained and led by the Pakistan Army. And they had been given weapons which we did not have. For example, they had .50 machine guns. So if a round came in through the carriage, it would take the head off our troops in the carriage. After all, we were in the carriage. We were sitting ducks, to use the expression.
Now, where did this fighting take place? Can you?
Colonel Shabir should have known, been wiser. The previous day, his family had been taken in a mechanical transport column, and as they were approaching the Indus, they were shot at. Now, he should have realized that something was happening. But nevertheless, it was deemed to be just tribal. As I say, I did not know this. His wife had rung him up to tell him that they had been shot at. But I think between the officiating brigade commander and him, they came to the conclusion that it was just a tribal enthusiasm.
Now, what dates were you attacked?
We were attacked, the actual convoy where Mr. Shabir was traveling in was attacked on 31st of August. They were fired at, but not stopped. And she had rung up, when they reached Rawalpindi, she had rung up her husband and said, "Be careful that this has happened." But he, I think, was told by the brigade commander that this was nothing to do with the battalion, it was just the hijinks of these tribesmen. 1st September, at a place called the Ustarzai Defile, between Thal and Kohat, it was a narrow gauge train narrow gauge train, and you had to circle around in the defile. So they had put boulders in front of the engine as we came into this defile. And then when the train stopped, they rolled boulders down behind the engine. So the train could not move either way, front or back. And the train crew, that is the driver and the fireman.
Yes,
I was on this train.
What's your memory of it? What did you see happen?
Well, I'll give you my citation. Colonel Shabir led a diversion, and I had to remove the boulders in front of the train. I mean, the tribesmen were firing at me from 50 yards. As Colonel Emerson says, he does not know how I'm still alive. But anyway, by making short dashes and pushing the boulders and then dashing back under cover, I eventually removed the boulders. Colonel Shabir having led a diversion. And then when things were virtually over, the so-called frontier militia, frontier corps turned up, and I went around the corner and brought the driver, the fireman, and back to the train, and we moved off. So we arrived at Kohat, and now it was decided, in view of this development, that there'd be two trains the next day. I mean, as I say, I was not present in the discussions between the officiating brigade commander, Colonel Grant, and Colonel Shabir at the brigade headquarters. There were two trains. And since I had a Muslim company, I was put onto the second train. And Colonel Shabir and two Hindu companies were on the leading train. But we were supposed to go in stages. And we were supposed to be given an escort of armored cars, which were, of course, by now Pakistan Army, manned by Pakistanis, as also the area near the Indus River was supposed to be picketed by a Pakistani battalion. You know, things being what they are, one does not want to go into the perfidy and deceit that went on at that point of time. Colonel Shabir, who had been allotted to Pakistan in terms of the rundown of the British officers in India, after his experience in this train journey, which took us 48 days to get to our destination, he refused to go to Pakistan and opted to come back to Britain. He refused to accept the 5-year contract that is being offered to him in Pakistan.
Now, what happened in this second attack? You were going in two trains.
I was now put in the second train because I had a Muslim company. You see, that was the decision by the GOC, General Ross Mackay, because he flew in from Peshawar, and he briefed the commanding officer and the brigade commander. I mean, mind you, I will say this for Ross Mackay, he was a good man. He stayed on in Pakistan and became a lieutenant general there. At that time, he was a major general. So they decided, because I had a Muslim company allotted to Pakistan, but who did not want to go to Pakistan, that they should not be tested in any way. And Shabir and two Hindu companies would go in the leading train.
So what happened?